Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 9 with French breeder Bernard Le Courtois, recorded at a stud farm hard at Brouilmal in Normandy, France. In addition to being a successful breeder, Bernard is also a stallion owner, an international judge, a former journalist and editor of Le Prom magazine, and a former president of the Selle Française Studbook. I had read before that before you became a journalist, you had been studying law. Do you ever think what life would be like if you continued with your law career?
I had different opportunities to change my life when I was young, and it's impossible to say what happens if I became a lawyer. My change was, should be different, of course, but it's impossible to know what happens.
Because what I thought was interesting with your career in journalism, that it sounds like it happened accidentally.
Not really accidentally, yeah. Because I was very fan of old magazine called Le Prom. Mm-hmm. And especially about some articles written by a man. He has a writing name, Armoricus. And he wrote many articles about the thoroughbred lineage, because at this time, in the 70s, we used a lot of thoroughbred mm-hmm. breeding. For at this time, we don't say sport horses, we say riding horses.
Yes.
It's not the
sport wasn't as developed at the
time.
Yeah,
later. And I like very much to read this article. Sometime he was a little bit intellectual masturbation, because he moved back to the 18th century to explain why the horse was so good at the moment. But I like that very much. And during my, I don't know the word in English, military service, I have time, because I organize a library of the place when I was, and I have a lot of time to write articles. And I start to write articles about the a thoroughbred. His name was Monceau. And he was a good thoroughbred. He was at the National Stud in Compiègne, in the north of France. And then I wrote articles about two very good stallion, half-brother with the same sire, Nikio and Nankin. And they are both by the thoroughbred Fra Diavolo. And that's my first articles. But I never sent articles to the editor because I was too shy and too young. But it was only for myself.
That's what I thought was nice, that you were, that out of the pure interest or passion, that you were interested enough to write these for yourself. It wasn't trying to start a career in equestrian journalism. It was just purely for the passion of what you were doing.
And once, at this time, I was at the university, in the law university, and during the weekend, we jump in the university competition, mm-hmm. and I was in my university team, and one of my best friends, she was in a veterinary school, and we compete together in this university show jumping competition. And once I show her the articles, and she told me, are you crazy? You have to send the articles to the Le Prom editor, because it's exactly that they use to publish. And she put the articles in an envelope, and she sent the articles to the guy who became my mentor, François Lassayette. And he was at this time the editor of Le Prom. And he phoned me a week later for a meeting, and he asked me to work with him. That was the beginning.
That's what I thought was amazing. It shows the importance of having good friends to support you in that. Was it during your time in Le Prant that you heard of the opportunity, or you heard that Almay had become available, or was it later?
No, I started with Le Prant. I was 20, maybe 21 years old. It was during my military service. Yeah. And I think it was in 1975. And then in 81, I proposed to, because at this time Le Prant, the owner of Le Prant was an official organization called l'UNIC. UNIC. Okay. It was the organization to promote the French horse, all the French horse, thoroughbred, dwarf horse, and so on, all over the world. And they published Le Prant and also another magazine for the racing horses. And I proposed to the president of l'UNIC to go to America for 6 months to examine the American market, mm-hmm. and maybe to finally propose to organize an auction, horse auction, sport horse auction in America. And they accept to pay for this travel, and they proposed to the government because there are subsidies from the government, and I spent six months in America, paid by the UNIC and the government, to explore the American market, and
that was nice.
Yeah, it was very funny because I was maybe 24 or 25 years old, and I live in New York. I have an office at the embassy because my English was worse than my English right now, and there is a secretary who takes the flight tickets, the meeting with the riders, yeah. the trainers, the coaches, and so on. And every Wednesday, I flew to big show like Devon Show in Florida or everywhere on the East Coast. Not far away, and I met the riders. I met the coaches, and I met for the first time George Morris, mm-hmm. the famous coach at this time. And it was very difficult for me because I was very shy. My English was bad, and I was shy. And it was very difficult to me to have contact with the people. But I did my job. I made interviews and so on. And when I move back to New York, I have a funny time for the half Monday, Tuesday, yeah. and it was very funny. I live with my friend in New York, and it was a very good, very funny.
It's
time.
An incredible experience. Yeah.
And when I move back, after that, I take 2 weeks for holiday to Hawaii, and then and California, and I move back to France. And during my trip in America, I met a very important people like Fred Graham. Fred Lorimer Graham was the first owner of Almay. That's a story starts by him. And he spent half of his time in France and half in America. And he had a very nice breeding farm in Upperville. In Virginia and nearby Washington yeah. D.C. And I have an appointment with him during my trip. I met during this lunch Henri Prudent and Cathy Monahan, and Fred Graham would like to organize an American Sale Français association, and he asked me to become the new manager of this association. And for me, it was incredible. And I accept immediately. And my plan was to spend 6 months in Boston to learn English, mm-hmm. and then to accept a job and spend half my time in France and America and to promote Sale Français in America. And And that's at this time I thought my life could be very different that I planned before when I was to the law university, and I decided to live in America. That's a big challenge for me, and I come back to France. I give my report. We organize an auction to Miami, and we send I think 10 or 12 horse French horses, Le Français, and Michel Robert rode the horse, and it was a success. And
approximately what year is that?
I think 82, the following year when I moved back, and I met my Le Point editor François Lassayette, to explain that I stopped to work with Le Point because I decided to live in America. And he said, no, it's not possible. Because during you were in America, they sold the magazine to another people and they want you as a chief editor.
It was the condition of sale, yeah. Or a condition of the sale.
Because he himself was too old. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to change the boss and so on, something like that, and he said you have to accept to stay in France because if you don't accept the job, the deal will be not valuable.
Isn't it incredible to have been such demand in your 20s?
For me it was very difficult decision because in my mind I decided to live in America, and for me it was a very open country to give the chance to the young people and so on. That is not it's not the same in France, and especially in the horses
community.
And this time, for example, the French young horse circuit. All the people, the president, the director, and so on, are military. And it was a very different atmosphere, ambience.
Very traditional.
Yeah. And for me, it was very difficult to choose between America or Le Point.
Two good options, though.
Yeah.
At least.
And finally, I thought it was a more secure opportunity to stay in France, because the option of the American job is... I didn't know if I was for that, because I'm not I'm not a horse dealer. I'm not I have not all the quality to become a horse dealer, and finally I chose Le Point, and I forgot the American dream.
Yeah. Did you still travel back to America much during your time at Le Point?
As journalist, yes. I went to Madison Square Garden. I make a tour. At this time, there was Madison Square Garden. There was Washington, D.C., show at Washington, D.C. There was Toronto. And there was three shows in September or October. And I went to Los Angeles Olympic Games in 84. That's an amazing experience. And my breeding, my stallion honor career started in L.A. That's funny, because at this time there is no internet, etc., and so on. And as a journalist, I worked for Le Point, but I work also for a newspaper, Le Quotidien Paris, during the Olympics. And every night I have to phone to the journal to say my article, because there is no fax, there is no nothing. Yeah. It was in 20th century.
Was the newspaper also equestrian, or was it?
No, it's a newspaper.
Oh, okay, it's not specific.
But during the Olympics, they asked me to send articles about the equestrians.
Yes.
Event during the Olympics. And we were eight French journalists, and we rent a very nice villa with a swimming pool, and we came with a cooker, cuisinier?
Yeah. Cook.
Your cook, mm-hmm. Yeah. And because we have no time to organize everything, because we moved back after the show, and we have to write articles and to phone to Paris immediately and so on. And during this, one of my partner in the magazine was Karine de Wilder, who has a twin sister, who was Pierre Durand's wife.
Okay.
You see, mm-hmm, the connection.
Yeah.
And sometimes Nadia, the twin sister of Karine, came with us for dinner, and we talk about horses and so on. And once she told me about Laudanum, the thoroughbred, who was ridden by her husband, Pierre Durand, when he was younger. He was his Grand Prix winner before Japloux. And she told me that the horse moved to south of France. Everybody forgot him. He bred only eight mares, and it was a pity because he was a fantastic thoroughbred jumper. And we decided to organize something new. And when I start to breed, my I don't know if it's a good word, inspiration.
Yes.
Yeah. Was the thoroughbred, the people of thoroughbred, because they are more the organization of the breeding of the stallion market. Everything was more professional.
And structured.
Yeah. And I decide to organize the first sport horse syndicate. And when we came back from LA to France, I met Pierre Durand and the owner of Laudanum, and we decided to make a deal. And it was the year that I decided to stop with Lepron. I take a year off,
yes,
to decide, well, what...
I guess sabbatical. Or...
Yeah. And
and can I just go back a bit? Because what's amazing in a short space of time, you went to the US, you thought that, you know, you were a shy young man at the time, and in a very short space of time you're doing a deal and you're creating a syndicate for Laudanum.
Yeah,
it's an amazing transformation in a short space of time, if you know, from a shy young man to creating what would become such an influential syndicate.
I think at this time of my life, I was very lucky, because there was a very good circumstances, and you say the chance, you have to pick up the chance, mm-hmm, and I think there is many in the same. You are right. In the short time, I have very good opportunities that I have a chance to take, and. When I decide to syndicate Laudanum, there is a very important breeder in France, Fernand Lered, who was also interested by the same horse, by Laudanum. But he did not want to buy the horse, he wanted to rent the horse.
Okay.
And when I decide to... I have not the money to buy the horse, but when I decide to organize a syndication, the first people I met, it was Fernand Lered. And I say, Fernand, you lost the market. But if you want to rent the horse, it's because you like the horse very much, and to breed with Laudanum. And I propose to you to buy the first share. And finally, he accepted to buy the first share.
And how many shares did you create? How many
40,
shares in
40.
Total? 40.
40. And the owner, the past owner kept 20. My commission was a couple of shares. I don't took money, but I want to participate of the,
yes,
syndicate. And after Fernand Lered, I decided to meet the four best breeders in France, in Normandy. Fernand Lered, Alexis Pignolet, Fernand Lered, Haras des Rouges, Alexis Pignolet, Élevage d'Elle, Alain Navet, the father of Eric Navet, Élevage de Bossy, and the fourth one was Jean Broyer, the father of Denis Broyer, And now at this time they have no prefix, but now it's tam, the breeding tam. And I met these four people, and they bought shares. And after that, it was easy because the four best breeders in France accept to participate at this first syndicate. And it was so easy to sell the others to other people from everywhere in France. That's my first experience with a stallion.
There's a few amazing things there, though, because also it took quite a degree of confidence and belief in what you were doing to approach the most successful breeders in Normandy with this proposal. But also, it's incredible that here was this young guy coming to them with a stallion that the industry had forgotten, offering them an opportunity to be involved in the syndicate, and all of them saying yes. Why do you think that was, that they...
I don't know. I have no explanation. I don't know, because...
But it's incredible.
Yeah. I have some contact with them because I was a journalist and I met them on the show and in Normandy and so on. But they all have the age of my father. I am of the same generation of their son.
Children, yeah.
No, I can't explain why they accept. Because the tactic to sell the first share to Fernand Lored, who was the most important people, and the others say, why not?
If he's in, we want.
Yeah. But that's funny because Fernand was the only one who never used laudanum. It's incredible. He sold the stud fee every year, but he never used him.
And did he ever explain why?
No, never. I don't know. The price of the share was very, very cheap.
Yeah.
He was in euro. He was less than 1,000 euro, and it was the price of one stud fee. There is no risk because at the first, if you sell the stud fee the first year, you get back your money immediately.
Yeah.
There is no risk. Maybe it's because that the people accept to participate to the syndicate, because there is no risk at all.
So for each share you could breed one mare each year.
Yeah. You use the stud fee or you sell to another people the stud fee. But the thing interesting, it's the first year the stud fee was on 1,000 euros, but 2 years later it was 2,000 euros, and 5 years later it was 3,000 euros. And at the beginning, laudanum, at this time, laudanum was a thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. He was not allowed to breed by insemination. You have to breed by natural way, like
even though he was available for the sport horse industry.
Yes, but at this time the nationals would say no, it's a thoroughbred. It was just the beginning of the only Galoubet was used by insemination, and they refused to accept laudanum to breed by insemination for a couple of years, and then they themselves use insemination with a frozen semen of a thoroughbred called Amarpour. It was dyed, they have frozen semen, and they use the semen, and I say immediately, okay, you use insemination for this thoroughbred, I can use for laudanum. And laudanum, when I syndicate laudanum, he was 16 years old, or 15 years old, and he died, he was 30 years old. And he was very successful because offspring was very, very good. He never produced 1.60 meters or just a few 1.60 meters Grand Prix winner, but he produced so many 1.45 meters, 50, 55 Grand Prix horses, and very easy to ride for amateur who want to jump Grand Prix. And he was an amazing stallion.
Yeah, and it's great. You can still see the influence coming through in his daughters as well, which is great.
And as I know, you like very much line breeding.
Yeah.
And laudanum has an interesting line breeding.
Very much so.
He has twice the same grandmother. Ballinash, who was the mother of Moon, mother of Montaval, mother of many good horses, of course, thoroughbred. But like Moon at this time was very successful because his thoroughbred offspring jumped very well in international show jumping, That's one of the facts that Laudanum was very interesting in for breeding.
Definitely. Then with the success of that syndicate, when you got your next opportunity, it probably gave you a lot of confidence to do it again.
And the other part of chance is, at this time, my office was in Versailles, nearby the chateau. Yeah. But I went to the L'Unique office in the Place de l'Étoile in Paris, because they have a very interesting library with very old book. And sometimes I have a chronicle that I pick up some very old 19th century article about breeding, selection, feeding, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I was looking in a library for a new article, and there is a director office. The door was open, and there is a big meeting with the director of the French Federation, the director of the National Stud, the director of the L'Unique, and so on. And they call with somebody at the phone, and they call about a horse, Almé. Almé was in Belgium at this time, and the horse dealer who bought Almé want to sell the horse to the National Stud. And I heard the conversation because the door was open and everybody spoke. They didn't know that I was in the next door, and I was very surprised by that I can hear, because people say stupid things about me. The national state say no, it's too old, 18 years old. He has only one testicles. We can offer only the price of a 3-year-old young stallion. And I suppose the price was bigger. And finally, the French Federation said, well, Almé was not a top horse jumping himself, and he produced only Galoubet and Jalisco and I Love You, that's all.
Only. Some of the most influential.
And at this time, Almé in France bred a maximum of 30 mares a year, and he produced three top stallions with just a few offspring. And finally, they refused the proposal of the Belgium guys. And I was so surprised. When everybody left, I went to talk with the director of L'Unique, and I said...
To hit him with the book.
And I said, could you tell me who was your...
Contact.
Your contact, because... it's impossible to refuse to get back Almé in France. And he told me that it was François Maty, mm-hmm. the Belgian horse dealer. And I contact François Maty, and I say, I have no money to buy the horse, but we can organize a syndicate like I made for Laudanum mm-hmm. last year. And he say, yes, maybe not. I have several proposals from South America, from States, and I'm not sure... And I insist, I drove to Belgium, because at this time the horse was at Zangescheid.
Leon Melchior's, yeah.
In fact, Leon Melchior bought to Mr. Graham, Fred Lorimer Graham, Almé, 10 years before. When Mr. Melchior decided to stop to breed, I don't remember when, mm-hmm. but once he decided to stop to breed, and he sold... He wanted to sell all the stud farm, broodmares, thousands of broodmares and stallions, to the government of Netherlands. And I don't know why, there is for political reasons, the Dutch government changed the Ministry of Agriculture chief, and they lost the market. And finally, he sold the mares. Most of them in Belgium, in the Netherlands or Germany, and he sold the two most fashionable stallions to the Dutch government, Almé and Ramiro. And Almé bred in Netherlands for maybe 5 years, and he has colleagues or something like that. They cut one testicle, and the insurance pay the horse and get back the horse, and sold the horse to François Maty. And François Maty send the horse to Melchior to breed this year, but he want to sell the horse, to sell back the horse. It, because of that, he proposed the horse to the French National Stud. And when I start to contact François Mathy, he told me, no, I have a proposal from America, from the American people, because 2 years before, Galoubet was syndicated for $2 million in America. And Almé was the father of Galoubet. And he sought to sell the horse for a lot of money to America. And at this time, I have also chance, because, in fact, the semen of Almé was not good for to freeze. It never they never had any frozen semen of Almé, because the semen was good in fresh, chilled semen, but never in frozen semen. And finally, the Americans say, okay, we can buy the horse. In fact, at the beginning, they want to move the horse to America, but he was positive to the pyroplasmosis. He can't go to America. After that, they say, okay, the stallions will stay in Belgium. You collect and freeze the semen, and we import the semen. But the semen was not good to import. And finally, François Mathy cannot sell the horse to America. After that, he told me, I have a Venezuelan customer who proposed to give me a farm, 2,000 hectares, and he moves the horse to Venezuela. And I say, no, you can't send the... It's impossible to send Almé to South America. Venezuela is a nice, maybe a nice country, but not for breeding.
Yeah.
And finally, after 9 months of discussions, François Mathy signed the contract, and I organized the syndication. I made an announcement in Lepron, and when the people understood that Almé can come back to France, in 2 days, I sold all the share. The share at this time was 20,000 francs.
What's that in, approximately in euro?
3,000 euros. It was the price of a stud fee. That's the same. It's the same.
The same way you did with laudanum. You got one breeding.
Yeah.
Every year.
And it's funny because I receive every day envelope with a check, and people say, I heard that Almé is sitting in syndicated, and I don't know the price of the share. I send you a blank check. Yeah, and I would like to buy one or two or maybe three if it's possible. And it was incredible, because during 3 weeks I send back to the people check, because I am not chair to sell. All the chair was sold in 2 days. That's a very good memory.
It's an amazing story, and it was an amazing result. And that's made it twice as amazing. But when you look now, his influence has been phenomenal. And even as I was driving through Normandy over the last day or two, and I was thinking about just how much of an influence, even in my own breeding program, probably half of my mares either have Almé or a cross of laudanum. And I was thinking to myself, like, it's amazing the impact. And then I started to think about the world rankings. If you look at the WBFSH rankings for last year, of the top 10 show jumping stallions in the world, 5 of them carry a cross of Almé. And I was thinking, that's pretty incredible that one horse has influenced 5 of the world's top 10. And then I looked to eventing. I think it's either 4 or 5 in eventing have either a cross of Almé or laudanum. 1, Ars Vivendi, has 2 crosses in 3 generations. And then on top of that, 2 of the world's top 4 eventing stallions in the world are from Brumal. And I was thinking, like, it's phenomenal. And then I was just thinking, like, I just kept going with this thought in my head, and then I thought the Olympics in Rio, of gold, silver and bronze. Gold, Big Star, Almé. Silver, H&M, All In. 2 crosses of Almé. And then it was only the bronze fine lady that didn't have a cross. I was thinking, it's so incredible the strength and the reach of his influence. But what I was wondering, why is it that you think he made such an impact? What was it that he gave to his offspring that has made him so successful?
I have to say that the influence of Almi was the offspring that he had at the beginning, before I bought the horse. Because at the beginning, Almi was one of the first Saint-Francis stallion who compete. Before Almi, there is just a few. It was not a tradition in the tradition to compete the stallion.
They went straight to breeding.
Because at this time, 95% of the stallion was owned by the national stud, and they never compete. And Almi was one of the first private stallion, Saint-Francais private stallion, to compete. And he was an incredible jumper. And the people who use Almi at the beginning, the three or four first generation when he bred in France, was not traditional breeder farmers. It was a rider. Mm-hmm. Riders who saw Almi competing. And it was not in Le Mans area. They didn't know Almi at this time. It was the people in this area near my place, because Almi was not so far
exposed to him.
Yeah, Almi was with a rider near Chartres, and the people who used Almi at this time was the breeder who was at the same time professional riders. And like Michel Pellissier, like La Famille Godichaud-Polsen, the family Godichaud-Polsen, and so on, who was
close to the sport.
Yeah, and from Madame Lefranc du Cornet, who bred Galoubet, and the Pellissier family, who bred I Love You, or the breeder nearby here, Georges Sabras, who bred Jalisco, and that people. They live in Lorne, in my county, not on the Manche, because the stallion was nearby there, and there was a breeder and riders, and the best Almi offspring was born at this time.
Okay.
Later, when I get back Almi in France, he was very popular. Everybody knows Galoubet, Jalisco, I Love You, and so on. And the people who bought the share, most of them, not every people, but most of them, was new breeders. They have not especially the best mares. They want to participate of the syndicate to have offspring by Almi, but not with the best mare.
Okay.
And the quality of the mares that Almi bred at the end of his life was not so good. That's the quality of the mare that he bred at the beginning of his stallion career.
Do you think in general, though, that the best offspring of a stallion and a mare come in their early life?
It's difficult to say, because I never saw any statistic about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same for the broodmare. Some people say the first one are the best. But sometimes you have a mare who have a foal at 15, 16, 17 years old, and the horse will become a champion. I think there is no rules. Because I remember I wrote an article many years ago about that, and I took the ranking, the world ranking, and then to compare the age of the broodmare when they was born. And the percentage is, I think, equal. If you take, for example, a mare from 3 to 10, 10 to 15, and 15 to 20, you have maybe 25% on the first section, 20% of the second, and maybe 16 or it was 15% of the last one. There is no big difference. You can say most of the best horses in the world came from a very young mare, and I think it's the same for the stallion. The only thing I could say is, when a stallion starts to breed, maybe the people who want to use this new stallion are more
progressive,
maybe, more professional.
Mm-hmm.
They choose a mare that they think it's a good mare in the conformation, in the pedigree, in the ability to cross with this stallion. And then when the stallion become very fashionable, the people don't make the same
decisions. Yeah, that's a
very
good point.
They use the stallion because it's fashionable.
Yeah.
And they often I say to the people, you don't have to say, I want a stud fee of this stallion for my mare. You have to say, is this stallion is a good stallion for my mare? It's not the same
thought process.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good point, because even if I think when I've used something that is maybe 3 or 4 and it's really not commercial, but that's not why you're doing it. It's because you believe in the qualities of this horse and you believe that it's suitable for your mare. It's a very good point. Something that I wonder, you know, about your breeding program here is your original interest was very much in thoroughbreds, and obviously Laudanum has been very influential here. You've also had Hand and Glove. But going forward, how do you maintain the blood in your breeding program? Is it something that you struggle with?
I think I like the horse with blood. I'm always breed less thoroughbred than sport horses, but I still have thoroughbred for racing. I like that very much because I like the thoroughbred type. I like the horse with blood. I all the time use in the past thoroughbred stallion, but only thoroughbred who jump in Grand Prix, because the problem of the thoroughbred is the ability to jump, and my goal is you have to use a stallion who have the abilities that you want to find in the offspring. Now, everybody think it's normal, but 30, 40 years ago, no, because the people used horses, they don't know anything. The mare never jump in competition, the stallion never jump in competition, and the cross was like a lotto.
Hoping for a miracle. Mm-hmm.
And I use thoroughbred, but only thoroughbred with jump Grand Prix, because I think it's not interesting to use a nice thoroughbred because it's a thoroughbred. If you have a very bad technique to jump, I think it's a bad thing to. And in the past, the national stud used a lot of thoroughbred to cross with a Zel Francais. Just a few was very good. Improves the breeding program, and most of them was very bad, and was very bad at the first generation because they never produce very very talented jumper. But sometimes it's interesting to have a thoroughbred in a pedigree because there is not only the abilities to jump, there is also the new line, the new genes, the lot of things that the
toughness
the thoroughbred can bring to the horses. And when I choose my mares, I choose mares who have a thoroughbred very close in the pedigree. The only one who have no thoroughbred in the pedigree very close was Adorette.
Adorette, yeah.
Because she was Alme Gotthard. She was a magnificent broodmare. She won the broodmare show. I have something to tell you about that. The first year I bred Adorette. She had a foal by Laudanum, and his name was Cher Garma. He jumped CSIO with Philippe Rosier. And later, and I showed the mare to the broodmare show in Le Pin. She won, and I was selected for the Normandy broodmare show in Caen. And there was old-fashioned. He was the director of the National Stud of Saint-Lô, the director of National Stud of Le Pin, and two old, very old breeders of La Manche, and Adorette won the show. And finally, at this time, there was we call that the rappel. They, after judging the mare, they asked for the mare to come back and to look at the mare, and they decide to keep this one first, maybe change the ranking. And finally, old breeder came by me and say, "What's the mark on the mare?" I say, "It is an Hanoverian stamp." She's German. I say, yes, she's Hanoverian. And on the side, that's Zangersheim stamp. And I heard the people say, it's impossible to make a German mayor first of the...
Sacrilege.
Sacrilege. And they moved the mayor at the third place. But that it was 30 years ago, the mind changed.
Yeah. Is there a stallion past or present that you would have liked to own, and not just for commercial reasons?
A horse that I am...
A stallion that you really like, that you think, you know, you would love to have been the owner of him, or love to have him standing here with you. One that you haven't owned or been an agent for, but that you really admired.
I have the opportunity, when I bought Almer, I have the opportunity to buy also Ramiro. I think I made a mistake. But François Mathy told me that it was not a good stallion. And I thought he was older than me and more experienced, and I follow his advice. But maybe I think I made a mistake. I could buy Ramiro at the same time as Almer. After that, the horse that I liked very much was Gem Twist. It was one of my favorite at this time. I think many people don't know who was Gem Twist, but Gem Twist was a thoroughbred, a gelding, and he was an incredible jumper. He was a thoroughbred from a selection of jumpers.
That's what I was going to say. It was interesting. The fact that he was bred by a jumper,
yeah,
with jumper genetics,
yeah,
but 100% thoroughbred. That's what makes it so interesting.
But I never use the clone of Gem Twist because they look like some Connemara ponies, and I am not in confidence with that. I never had money to buy the very famous stallion, and but I have the opportunity to make deal with people to promote some stallion in France, and by this way I can use and promote in France stallion that I would
you
like to buy.
In there. Mm.
For example, I like very much Sandro. It was really my type of horse, the father of Sandro Boy. And I promote for Zangersheim Sandro. Cartago, mm-hmm. I like him very much. And I have a few very good calls by Cartago. And Calvaro, of course. And by this way, I can use and promote stallions that I cannot buy at this time. And because they are not for sale, or because I never had the money to buy this stallion. Mm-hmm. On the past, there was less jumping stallions than now. Now you have
too many.
Too many. Yeah. And if you look at the profile of the stallion owners of the company who promotes the stallion in France, I think it's the same everywhere. I consider that I am a farmer. The word in French is artisan, a private people. And if you look at the profile, who are the biggest stallion owner at the moment?
They're all groups.
The groups, like cooperative. And now you have a new type of stallion owner. Is a very rich people. People who have money, they bought horses to compete, and some of these are stallions, and they become stallion owner, and they organize everything to sell the stud fees and so on. And private people like me are just a few, and I think in the next generation we disappeared.
Yeah, because this is becoming very difficult to make a living from it now.
But the problem is the breeder, the new breeder, want to change, like the new things, and with the internet and so on, and they want a fashionable stallion. And if you want to buy a stallion on the market at the moment, you have to spend 1, 2, 3 million euro. And some people can do that, but I can't. My own experience is I just bought a few stallion in my... Because most of my stallion, I bred them, but because I have no choice, and I like that. Mm. I think it's more interesting to breed a horse than to buy a horse. And as a as a Grand Prix owner the same. I am not the same feeling with the horse that I bought with the horse that I bred. I'm more emotional when I see my horse, the horse that I bred to win, and two of my best events in my life was the Olympics in Beijing with in Hong Kong with Jaguar, and the Lexington the WEG in Lexington with Kachina. Or we went twice for the World Cup final with horses. That was a great event because I bred the horse and sometimes I sold the horse like Ornella. But when you bred a horse, it will be all his life your horse.
Yeah, and what's special actually with some of those are say Hong Kong with Jaguar. It's not just one you bred. But to have bred him, to have the father, to have bred 3 to 4 generations of him, and to have not just used the fathers, but to have bred the mother, the grandmother, maybe even the great-grandmother, and then to have owned, you know, or stood his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, it makes it an exceptional achievement.
That's the goal to breed. It's to make a selection to improve every generation. For example, I remember when I start to breed, I have a chance to meet Mrs. Lefranc du Cornet. She was one of the top French breeder. She bred Galoubet, but she also bred Elect and so on, many, many good horses. And when she retired, she stopped to breed. We made a partnership. She gave me her brood mares, and the year I started to breed in Bulmai. And I did not keep all the broodmares because some of one was not good enough, but I kept 5 of them. And one of them was an Anglo-Arab. Her name was Historiette. She was the daughter of Barry Gould and Pancho II. And she was a very, very pretty mare with Arabian type. She was crazy, very difficult to ride. She jumped. She races, she competes in eventing and show jumping in the medium level. But she was a little bit crazy. But she was pretty and very, very good dam line. And when I cross, I have 2 sisters, Historiette and half-sisters by same dam, Jolie Mom by Almé. And Jolie Mom won Grand Prix, 1.50 meters. And when I cross Historiette, I use at this time the best stallion available in France. I breed her with Galoubet, with Jalisco, with Noren, and I Love You. And I kept the Galoubet filly because she was not so pretty than the mother, but she was very strong. And she has the strong temperament of the mother blood with powerful. And her name was Divina Mai. And she had an accident. The mare kicked the foal in the face and broke the nose, and she never competed. But I breed her, this mare, Galoubet. I breed her to a stallion who jumped the Olympics, Quartz du Vallon, and she produced a Grand Prix mare, It Was My. And then I breed her with Alligator. And she has a very tall and huge filly, chestnut filly, Jenna Mai. She jumped very well, but I proposed the mare at different riders, and they told me, no, she's old-fashioned and too slow and powerful, but not modern type. Mm-hmm. And after 3 years in competing, I get back the mare at home, and I breed her. I look for a stallion very different. She was tall, very strong, very powerful. She needed a stallion very supple, very elastic, tiny, nice looking. And I saw at the Olympic in Sydney, Lando. And I fell in love with Lando immediately. And the rider was incredible. And I loved the couple. And when after the Olympics in Sydney, I sent a Falcon to Paul Schokemel, who was the owner of Landau, and I say, I'd like to promote Landau in France. And he told me, okay, we signed a contract. But I, at this time, I have some problem with another a Dutch guy who live in France who promote Landau the year before with the past owners.
Okay.
And he, and I say, okay, I don't want to have problem with people, and I don't promote Landau, but I liked him very much, and the deal I accept to not become the manager of Landau in France with the Dutch guy. But I say, you give me two stud fee to compensate. And I cross Landau with Gina Mai, and I bred Ornella Mai. And she was exactly that I want to breed, because she has the quality of both parents. And maybe if I get back the same cross a second time, the result was not so good. But she was an incredible jumper and amazing. But to start with Historiette to become to Ornella, if there is a three generations and 15 years. And so I think to breed good horse is not so easy that many people send. It's not because you buy a stud fee of Cornet and you cross with a mother by Jacob Blue, you will have the top.
To think in generations.
Yes, you have to improve your, because you know exactly the horse that you breed and the qualities, the abilities, and you can compensate or improve the quality. And at six, breeding it's a neat times.
You have a few different breeding programs happening here at the moment. You have your thoroughbreds, you have your sport horses, and you have your dogs.
Yeah.
All have been very successful. Are there any principles or philosophies or approaches that are common across all of them? Because what's interesting, you've always been drawn to breeding from a young age, and it seems to be that regardless of the animal or the type of horse or the type of dog, you've enjoyed a lot of success. And I'm wondering, do you see things in common with how you approach each one?
That is because I like the selection. I like the genetic and the selection. And I think it's the same way for every breed. A good friend of mine, the actor Jean Rochefort, said Bernard could breed anything, rabbits and so on, and to become a champion. But I think it's because I like very much the selection. And I remember when I was a teenager, my parents was not at all in the
horse world.
Horses, I imagine a breeding program, but only in my mind. And I wrote pedigrees of horses, and I spent hours of writing pedigrees of horses. I imagine the cross that I imagine. And at this time, there is a mare that I like very much. When I was a teenager, it was Tournebride. It was a daughter of Popov and the mother by Fra Diavolo. And she was a very good Grand Prix mare with Marcel Rosier. And I have the opportunity to ride Tournebride when I was a teenager, because I worked for Marcel Rosier for 6 months. And when I thought I'd become a professional rider, like all the teenagers.
Yeah.
And my program,
in your mind,
in my mind, started with this mare, and I imagine cross with different stallions, and I always like the breeding more. I like more the breeding than the competition.
We probably feel we have maybe a bit more control over the breeding and the, you know, making the combinations.
I think the best thing it's to be also riders and breeders, because you have all the best information. Sometimes I was a rider, but I jumped amateur Grand Prix 1.40 meters. But I'm not a professional writer. I never had a professional writer. And sometimes I think it's sad to have not the feeling that can have a rider with a horse. I talk with my riders, about the quality of the mares and so on. When I make an embryo transfer on a young mare, 3, 4, 5 years old, I talk with a rider who rides the mare to have information to choose the stallion. But I think it's a pity because I did not ride all my mares. I should be a best breeder if I had the opportunity to ride all my horses by myself.
And I'm glad you said that, because it was something that I wanted to ask you about. And it was a conversation that came up in December in a meeting about the difference between someone that was a rider and breeds horses, or someone that has never ridden and breeds horses, and yeah, how that can change. And it's something myself and the two friends who came to the stallion show in San Lo, we had a lot of discussion about it. And even for the mares that you didn't ride, you can probably still get a feeling of what they would be like to ride because you were a rider. And for me, not having ever ridden, I always feel extra pressure on myself to try it, to work harder, to go to shows, to talk to riders, to try and compensate for what I'll never fully understand. But what's very interesting was, even at the stallion show, when you were watching back the rounds of your own stallions after they had competed, when you were watching them on the phone, you could tell without you saying anything, you were watching it like a rider. You didn't just watch the video. The attention you were paying, because you were standing beside me when you were doing it, your phone followed all the jumps. And it was amazing. I could see your mind working like the rider. You didn't just watch and go, oh yeah, he jumped good or he jumped bad. You were watching and you were almost counting and going from fence to fence. And I think it is a huge advantage to be close to the sport, because to have experienced it or to participate in it on an ongoing basis, because otherwise we can never fully understand what it is that we're trying to breed.
And all the time I thought that one of my advantages 30 years ago when I started, it is because as a journalist, I were every weekend on the top competition, and I saw the top riders and the top horses. Mm-hmm. I saw on the paddock the conformation of the horses, yeah. And that was a great advantage. And because at this time many breeders never move, they have to feed the horses, the cows, and so on, and they never went to the show. After that, there was the TV. Every weekend, yes. The people can see the competition, the Grand Prix on the TV, and it was very interesting for the breeders to see the horse. But
it's better, but it's not a solution.
No, because they never saw the horse himself, yeah. And they never, because as a breeder, as an owner of top horses, I can go to the stables on the competition. Mm-hmm. I can see the horses, because when you see horse on the TV or on a show ring with a saddle or rider, every horse are nice, but if you can see the horse in a box or under the shower and to clean, and you, yeah, can see the conformation, the top line, the everything that the manner of build of the horse, the conformation, and that's very interesting.
It's a completely different picture.
And for example, you can understood that it's very important to have long hips to make a jumper, and I think there is more horses with a very long hips than very short hips, and the shoulder. At the beginning we thought that the horse need a very good angulation and very long shoulder, but there is many horses who jump with a very straight shoulders and short shoulders, and it's not so important, and many things like that you can see if you have the opportunity to look at the horse themselves in a big show,
because even the character and just There was a stallion that for the last few years I always found very interesting, and I watched a lot of videos, but I had never had the opportunity to see it at a show. I could never fully decide on which of my mares would be most suitable for him. And then 2 years ago, I got the opportunity to buy a daughter of his that I really liked. So when I was on this trip, I was going to Belgium. It was Périgueux. And I thought, it's something that I felt I really needed to do, is to drive to Germany to see him. And when I arrived, Eva Bitte, she was asking me if I drove to Germany just to see, you know, the one stallion. And they were laughing when I said that, you know, when I did. But for me, it was essential that if this was a horse that I wanted to breed to, and if I wanted to get a full understanding, I needed to stand there with the horse, because my understanding of his character completely changed having been standing there beside him. It was, I felt coming away that I understood the horse. But from watching videos at home, I never got the complete understanding of what the horse was like. Looking at the present or looking at the future, is there anything in breeding or in the sport horse industry that is of concern to you, that you don't like the way that it's going?
I consider that the sport change when I started to look at the high level competition in the 70s, 80s, the horses was not the same, the quality of the rider was not the same, and the obstacles and courses was not the same. At this time, when you saw a Grand Prix, when you saw a horse coming in a showground, you can say it's a German horse, it's a French horse, mm-hmm. it's a German rider, it's a French rider, it's an American rider. No, now it's impossible. All the horses look like the same, and all the quality of the equitation of the rider are almost the same. And at this time, the American rider rode only sore red. Now they rode the ride only European horses, mm-hmm. and many Belgian horses or German horses, and when you can look at Scott Brash and Steve Gerda, they for me two of the best riders in the world. They are the same style of equitation, the same quality, the same and they rode the same type of horses, and the competition is so different. After that, there is many things who change. The horse are more blood in Europe. We stopped to use thoroughbred, but the horses globally are more blood, and the quality of the riders is of course better. And but it better also because the quality of the horses are better, and that's the fruit of the selection of the breeder. Also the courses, the indoor arena, the indoor show did not exist 40 years ago, or just a few, but now there is the World Cup circuit, and 40 years ago the horses stopped to jump in October and start again in April. Now they jump never all stops. The year, they never stop, and the quality of the ground is really better because it's sand and everywhere, and in the past it was grass and bad quality ground. That's it's not possible today to jump in a very bad ground, and many things. The vet, I think, made progress, because I remember 40 years ago when you went to the stable, you have I don't know, this
an injection
on the floor in front of every box, because everything was acceptable, and now everything is not acceptable, mm-hmm. and I suppose the vet imagine new things to get the horse comfortable, and everything changed.
But is there anything at the moment, Is there any particular direction that breeding or breeders are moving in or towards that you don't particularly like?
The protection of the back feet, the boots.
The boots.
That's changed everything. And as a breeder, I don't like that. I know that everybody can make boots on the horse, and the chance are, it's the same for every horses, because every horses are, almost every horses are boots, have boots now. But as a breeder, I don't like that, because when you select a stallion, when you see a stallion jumping, you don't know if it's a natural
talent
or only because the boots. And we know that some horses are more sensible with the boots than others. I have a story. The first year that the boots appeared in France, I have a 5 years old by Voltaire gelding and a stallion by Jalisco. And the rider at the moment did not say anything about that, and I discovered that the horse have boots stronger than usual, and the Voltaire, the 5 years of Voltaire, come in the ring, he jump. I never saw the horse jump like that. It was incredible. I thought he fell down because the
a frog.
Yeah, because the back leg was so high, and on the 6 years old, the Jalisco son, nothing. The horse was absolutely not impressed by the boots, and he jumped like every day. And I talked to the rider and say, "What's happened? I think it's stupid, because when the horse go out of the ring, everybody want to buy the horse. The people was very impressed by the manner of jump." But I said to the rider, "It's stupid, because if they try the horse, they will try the horse without the boots. And the horse is a good horse, but it's not the horse that we saw at the 5 minutes ago. Because at this time it was not usual. After that, they stopped to rise.
Yeah,
the boots for the young horses." And some people can do that at home, but not in competition. I think it's a very good thing. But in the high level or small level, because the amateur rider who jump 1.10 meters can put boots on the in poor horse, and that's stupid. Some people say it's not a problem because everybody can put boots, but
it's still a problem for us breeders trying to see what's real.
Yeah.
And what's not real.
When you choose a stallion, you don't know if it's natural or not natural, because all the horses have boots. But when you test for the first time a horse in free jump, 3 years old in free jump, normally they have no boots. And you can be disappointed by the cross that you made, because if the mare need a horse with more scope, you don't know if you use a stallion who have a natural scope or scope because of the boots. I think it's a big problem.
Yeah. This is the question that I finish all interviews with, because I think that it's something that's very important looking to the future. But what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to somebody starting off in their breeding program? Or how would you best advise them or guide them?
The best thing is to have the chance to work with the older breeder. When I started, I have the chance to work with Madame Lefranc and a broodmare. That's a good chance. After that, I bought some different type of mares to make my selection. But if you are not from a breeder family, it's good to be to have connection with professional breeders, and to learn, to have the background of the breeder. If you are alone, there is two possibilities. If you have money, you buy the best mare on the market. Or best, I'm not sure is the best, but the more fashionable mares on the market, embryos, foals, and so on, like we can see on the on the internet at the moment, and there is a very fashionable cross, like the people who have money like to buy the Ombrio with Chaco Blue and the Cornet and Casal with a famous dam line. That's it's a little bit dangerous because it's more commercial than selection. You breed horses to sell immediately the embryo. For me, it's not the work of the breeder.
Yes.
But it's, as we say in France, dans l'air du temps. It's fashionable at the moment. But the problem is they use the same stallion and the same mares. And everybody want to buy the same cross. And that, for the diversity of the selection, I think is very bad. If you have not the money to buy this fashionable breeding, you have to choose a good mare, not especially a mare who jumped 1.60 meters. It's better, of course, but I remember a journalist asked me a question many years ago, and he told me, if you have the choice between two mares, one 3 years old, who never competed, but with a top pedigree to breed, or a mare who jumped 1.60 meters, but with a normal dam line, no very good strong dam line. What mare do you choose for breeding? And I say I prefer breed the first one, because if the mare who jumped 1.60 meters with a pedigree really normal, I'm not sure she can bring to the offspring a own quality. I prefer to use the example is Elvira. She's Laudanum Adorette. She's my foundation mare, and her two offspring was Jaguar and Kachina, and I breed her when she was three. I just test her in a free jump, and I saw that she have a good mind, good temperament, good movement, good technique, but not the scope. And I choose stallion who have the scope, and I bred immediately two top horses. And if you have not the money to buy the top commercial horses, you have to choose a mare, maybe who jump 1.35 meters, 1.40 meters, with a good technique, with blood, and with medium size, a mare easy to ride, easy to cross with different type of stallion. And if the mare have everything, good dam line, good technique, blood, you have just to bring her the scope. It's easier to
add than the other qualities.
Yeah. And after that, you have to produce a top horse. Sometimes you have the chance to produce the top horse at the first generation, but sometimes if you are not the best the best timeline, you can improve generation after generation that all the breeders did before. And sometimes you need 3-4 generations to produce the top horse that you imagine in your mind.